because he's already stated that the qualities of material nature are under his direction. So if we surrender to him, then very easily he can lift the effects of the modes of material nature and we'll come into the liberated position of life. So then he says you have to surrender if you want to come out of material entanglement. Then the next thing he says, that there are some people who will never surrender to me. It'll be very difficult for them to actually come to me, recognize me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, repose their unalloyed faith in me, and then become purified. So what are those types of people? He says that there are four. We went through those yesterday. The Mudha, the Naradama, the Mayaya Paritigyana, and the Asuram Bhavam Ashrita. So in summary, he said that the Mudhas are described as people who give up Krishna simply for the pursuit of sense gratification. Then the Naradama are people who give up social religious practices altogether, and they simply become very degraded and the lowest among mankind. We see that so widely spread today, that people who have given up all varieties of religious practice, following social injunctions, social activities, they become very, very degraded down to the lowest level. And Mayaya Pritigyan, those people whose knowledge has been stolen by the illusory energy, and then people who have openly accepted the viewpoint of the demons. And what is the viewpoint of the demons? Like, what was the viewpoint of Hiranyakasipu? He said, Vishnu, I'll kill him. I'll kill him. I'll rip out his I'll rip out his heart and I'll drink his blood. And that's the mentality that they have. So these people openly decry the existence of God. They say that no God can exist. Srila Prabhupada makes that point in his purport. They say God can't exist. God can't descend into this world. And then Prabhupada, very cleverly, he says, they can't really give any reason why he can't descend within the world, but they have this atheistic mentality. So it will be very difficult for them to approach. Now, yesterday in the class, somebody said, will any of these people ever be able, these four types of men, will they ever be able to actually come to Krishna, or are they forever doomed? And I was reading in a purport later in the chapter, where Srila Prabhupada says that the four types of pious men, they approach Krishna and they surrender to him so they can go to Krishna. And he says, but it will actually be very, very difficult for those impious men to come to the Lord. But then he said, still, these impious men, they may have the association of a pure devotee of the Lord. And if they get the association of a pure devotee, and if they follow a pure devotee's instructions, then they can become elevated as well. And we have an example of that, of some very impious people who received the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, and this Jagai and Madai. It's described that Jagai and Madai were the worst of the worst. They were so bad, but they received Lord Nityananda's mercy. And by receiving Lord Nityananda's mercy, they were able to receive the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and become purified. So then Krishna, so he went through the four types of people who won't surrender. And Prabhupada, he has a very beautiful purport that he's written. We read that yesterday. And today, he's going to speak about four types of people who do take shelter of Krishna. That's text number 16. The Lord says, Chaturvida bhajanti mam jana sukritin arjuna arto jignasur artarti jnani cha bharatar shava. He says, O best among the bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me: the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the absolute truth. So it's broken down into four divisions or four categories. And the first type of living entity that will approach Krishna is one who is distressed. And when we say distressed, we mean he's troubled by sickness. He is troubled by different calamities within this world. He is experiencing so many problems. Problems just existing within material life, and he wants to get his problems sorted out. And he doesn't know where else to turn, so he prays to God, and he approaches God. God, please help me to sort these different problems out in my life. Now, Srila Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives an example of a devotee or a personality who was, he was pious, and he was materialistic, and he got himself in some hot water, and then he approached the Lord, and by approaching the Lord, he was actually able to surrender, even from that distressed position. But that person that he describes is Gajendra the elephant, that's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was a big king, and he had so many elephant wives, and he was so powerful and so potent, and still, when he got in the lake, then the crocodile came and bit Gajendra's leg. And he was in an impossible situation because he was out of his element. You know, if he were on the land, being the most powerful creature, he could have, you know, finished the crocodile quite easily, but he was in the crocodile's element, and it was very difficult for him. So finally, in his distressful condition, he called out to the Lord, and he surrendered to the Lord, and therefore he was protected. So that's first. And then he says, distressed, and then desirer of wealth. So that's first was artha, is distress, and then artha arti is those people who are desiring some wealth. So here it says that they want pleasure in this world, they want pleasure in the next world also. They want all varieties of material happiness. They would like land, they would like kingdoms, they would like money, wealth in every imaginable way, they would like women. So many materialistic things they approach the Lord for. So the example which is given of a devotee or a pious soul who approached the Lord with materialistic desires is Dhruva Maharaj. And it's described that, well, we know the story of Dhruva. He was a young boy, and he was from Kshatriya family, and then he was insulted by his stepmother. He wanted to sit on the lap of his father, but then his stepmother said, no, you can't sit here. This place is only the sitting place of my son only. You go someplace else. So even though he was just 5 years old, because he was a Kshatriya, he became enraged. He became very infuriated. And in his infuriated state, he said, I don't want the kingdom of my father. He said, I don't want the kingdom of my grandfather. His father was King Uttanapad, correct? And his grandfather was Swayambhuva Manu. He said, I want a kingdom which is greater than my great-grandfather. And who was his great-grandfather? Lord Brahma. He said, so I want something more wonderful and more vast than the entire material creation. And so in order to achieve that, he took instructions from Narada Muni, his spiritual master. He accepted Narada Muni as his spiritual master. Narada appeared on the scene. And then he went into the forest and he started performing severe tapasya. But he was actually performing tapasya because he wanted material gain. He wanted land. He wanted a kingdom. He wanted material wealth. So then after the performance of his tapasya, he was approaching the Lord because he wanted material things. Then what happened? Then the Lord appeared before him. His worshipable deity, Lord Narayan, actually appeared before the eyes of Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva Maharaj saw that he was in a state of ecstasy. The Bhagavatam explains that Dhruva actually fell unconscious on the ground. Prabhupada says that if the Lord appears before you, then generally you should offer some prayers to the Lord. You should glorify the Lord some. But this boy, he became so overwhelmed, he just fell unconscious on the ground at the feet of the Lord. So then the Lord himself, he took his conch shell and placed his conch on Dhruva's head, and then Dhruva came to his consciousness. Then he began praying to the Lord with very suitable prayers. And his first prayer is that he said that I was performing all varieties of tapasya and austerities simply because I wanted a big position within this world. He said that's what I was shooting for. He said I wanted something big. Materially, I wanted the best. He said, but even though I was shooting for the biggest and best material thing, now you've appeared before me. And since you've appeared before me, I can see that you are actually, he uses the word, he says, Divya Ratnam. He says, you are a transcendental gem, and what I was looking for were broken pieces of glass. So he said, therefore, I don't want anything else. I simply surrender to you. So he was the example of a very pious person who is approaching the Lord for something material. And we, if you read the story in the Bhagavatam, you can see that the remainder the remainder of Dhruva Maharaj's life, he felt so bad. He was thinking, the Lord is so wonderful, and the Lord is beyond everything else. He said, and I was so fallen that I was actually approaching the Lord for material things. And Bhagavatam describes how Lord Narayan was so kind and so merciful in fulfilling the desires of Dhruva Maharaj. What did he do? Because Dhruva, when he was told that he couldn't sit on his father's lap and only his stepbrother, what was his stepbrother's name? Anyone can recall? Huh? Uttama? Only Uttama could sit on his father's lap, then naturally, Dhruva, he felt some enmity, even towards his brother. And so what happened is the Lord arranged that later, his brother was in the jungle, and he was hunting, and his brother was attacked by a lion, and he was killed. And then Dhruva, he felt bad about that, because he could understand that it was actually the Lord who was working in fulfilling his desires. And then, further than that, when Uttama died, what happened to his stepmother? She couldn't live any longer either, because her son had died. And so then she died. You know. And then Dhruva, he said, oh my God. He said, just see how merciful the Lord is, what he's doing. I had a desire, and look to what extreme he's going to fulfill my desires. So the point is, he felt, I approached the Lord, but I shouldn't have. So these two types of devotees, has been described that they're like materialistic. They're approaching the Lord, they want some material return. And then the next example, which is given, he says, distressed, who is Gajendra, desire of wealth, Dhruva. Then he says the inquisitive, and that inquisitive, he gives the example of Shonaka Rishi. And Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that the Jignasu, he has different aspirations or different desires. Like, for example, one of his desires is that he wants to become very, very expert in Sanskrit grammar, to know the ins and outs of Sanskrit. Because by knowing Sanskrit, a person is held in very high esteem. A person may have a desire to understand nyaya. A person may want to understand logic. He has a desire actually to understand what is the nature of the soul. But Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that for the most part these people are dry philosophers. They cultivate a lot of philosophical understanding of the very dry. And when I read that, it made me think of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, of the example of Srila Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's own confession in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says, there was never a person who was drier than me. He said, I was the most dried up, absolutely miserable person. Although I had so much knowledge, and I had so much philosophical understanding, and I could spin around philosophical concepts and I could speak Sanskrit better than anyone, and I knew logic better than anyone, and people gave me so much respect, and people gave me so much esteem. He said, still, I was miserable, and I was dry. And he couldn't understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He couldn't understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was God. So what were the events that took place, just say, in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's life? How did Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, how is ultimately he was able to change? Is that he had a brother-in-law whose name was Gopinath Patanayaka. And Gopinath was a devotee. He was a pure devotee. And he used to go down to Sarvabhauma's place, and he used to just chastise Sarvabhauma from top to bottom. And that Sarvabhauma couldn't understand that Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So by that chastising of a devotee, and by that association with a pure devotee, he qualified for receiving the mercy of the Lord. And then we know that when Mahaprabhu, after he took sannyas, he went down to Jagannath Puri. And in Jagannath Puri, he went to the temple. And when he went to the temple, he saw the Lord of his life, Jagannath. And then he fell unconscious. And so the guards of the temple were just getting ready to beat Mahaprabhu. They had their sticks ready, and they were just going to start, you know, beating him as being another imposter who was coming and was showing some bhav in the temple room, some ecstasy in the temple room. And then Sarvabhauma came. And Sarvabhauma, he simply saw. He was such a learned scholar that he saw the body of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And only by seeing the physical symptoms in Lord Chaitanya's body, he knew that he was experiencing the greatest ecstasy that could be experienced by anyone. And that greatest ecstasy is known as Mahabhav. And so he went and he saw this form of this beautiful young sannyasi. And he said, this person is in ecstasy. This person is not faking it. You know, this person is not putting on. You know, back in the early days of the movement, the devotees from Los Angeles, they sent Prabhupada a letter one time. And there's one famous lady, sort of like yogi devotee from Vrindavan. What's the name of that lady? She has her ashram just beyond the Chungi, on the left-hand side there. It says the old temple of Sri Govardhan Nath. What's her name? Something or other. It's not Anandamayi. That was another one. And she has her ashram just next to Kirti Raj's house there. Her old ashram. That sign is on the corner. Anyhow, I forget her name. But she was in the West, and she would visit the temples. And she was visiting Los Angeles, and the devotees would be having a roaring kirtan in the evening time, and she would come and she'd visit with some of her friends, and right in the middle of the roaring kirtan, she'd go, "Ah!" And she'd hit the ground. And then she'd start rolling back and forth on the ground. This used to happen in Vrindavan a lot also. When I was there from 77 till 79, we used to get these people that come down from Delhi with all of the, they'd like bring two or three busloads of people down. And the guru would start having like the roaring, Vrindavan is famous for their roaring kirtans in the evening. And then, you know, all the people would be there and the devotees would be dancing in the middle of the kirtan. And then all of a sudden the guru of some group will jump in the middle of the kirtan. And generally it was like some, you know, sort of short, fat, middle-aged Punjabi lady, you know. And she'd get in the middle of the kirtan and throw her hands up. And then the next thing, just on the ground, you know, not moving, nothing. So the devotees, they asked Prabhupada, they wrote him a letter, they said, "Srila Prabhupada, you know, this person is falling down in the kirtan like they're in ecstasy. Are they really in ecstasy?" Prabhupada said, he said, "Maybe." He said, "But the sure way to tell is when they fall down in kirtan, you simply go up to them and you give them one good kick in the head." He said, "If they move at all, they're not in ecstasy." He said, "If they remain still, oh, they're very advanced." So Mahaprabhu, he was laying there like that. And Sarvabhauma, he came up and he started testing Mahaprabhu. And we know from reading in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he took some cotton. He had some cotton with him. He took some cotton out of his pocket and he made the cotton just two or three fibers. And he held that beneath the nose of Lord Chaitanya. And then he saw That cotton was moving very, very slightly. So he said, actually, he's alive. They weren't sure if he was, you know, dead or alive. They just saw these manifestation of ecstatic symptoms. And so then Sarvabhauma said, take him to my house. So then they picked up Mahaprabhu and they transported his body over to Sarvabhauma's place. And then all the devotees arrived after that, and they found out from the temple caretaker that this beautiful, beautiful sannyasi had come, and he'd seen Jagannath, and he'd fallen unconscious, and just before he was getting ready to get beaten, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came, and Sarvabhauma said he was actually a big, big person. So they carried him over to Sarvabhauma's house, and the devotees went there, and they found Mahaprabhu, and they started chanting Hare Krishna, and they revived him. So then there was the discussion, the ensuing discussion between Sarvabhauma and Mahaprabhu. And in that way, in that discussion, Sarvabhauma wanted to know who he took sannyas from. He looked like he was a Mayavadi, you know, what class he belonged to, all those different talks. And then Sarvabhauma said, well, you know, I can reinitiate you if you want me to. He was into reinitiation. He said, I can reinitiate you if you want me to. Because, you know, you're sort of like from, you know, a low class of, you know, Mayavadis. I can, like, give you the top line stuff if you want it. And he said, but I want to know, you know, why all this dancing and this and that and the other. He said, do you know Vedanta? Mahaprabhu said, yes, I know Vedanta. And Sarvabhauma, he was such an erudite scholar. He said, okay, now I want to speak Vedanta to you. I want to discuss Vedanta. So for 7 days, Mahaprabhu, he sat and he listened to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya discussing Vedanta. And Mahaprabhu just, because Mahaprabhu was such a perfect, he was perfect in all respects, he was a perfect gentleman also, and he just sat there patiently listening to everything, didn't say a word. So then after 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, but you say that you understand Vedanta, but I've been speaking for 7 days and you haven't said anything. Do you actually understand Vedanta? Mahaprabhu said, yes, I understand Vedanta, but everything that you're speaking is just garbage. So he actually, because he was such a, you know, he had such a conception of himself as being, you know, a person who is knowing Sanskrit, a person who is knowing Nyaya, a person who was so advanced in all different types of philosophical understanding, he took some offense to that statement. But then he said, well, then if I'm speaking garbage, you explain Vedanta. And then Mahaprabhu spoke Vedanta. And when he spoke Vedanta, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was stunned. He actually became stunned because he realized that only the Supreme Person could explain Vedanta in that way. So I often think it's like you see these, when they have that professional boxing, and one of the boxers, he comes up and he has his right hand, and he gives a right punch, and the guy gets stunned. So that, you know, the discussion of Vedanta was like the right-hand punch that Mahaprabhu threw. But then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya looked at him and said, do you know the Atmarama verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam? Mahaprabhu said, yes. And he said, I can explain the Atmarama verse in so many different ways. I think it was 9 different ways that he could explain the Atmarama verse. And then he looked at Mahaprabhu, and he said, can you explain Atmarama verse? And so Mahaprabhu said, yes, I think so. And so then Lord Chaitanya, he explained the Atmarama verse in 61 or 63 or so many different ways he explained it. And then that was like the left-hand punch to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he just fell unconscious on the floor. He was knocked out. He fell unconscious, and then when he came to his consciousness, what did he do? Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that he stood up and he started dancing. And he started dancing in, like, very unique, novel, like sometimes when we have kirtans upstairs, you see so much unique and novel dancing going on, funny stuff. And all of the disciples, or all the students of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya who were there, and everyone who knew Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, they were looking at him and they were going, my God, look at this, you know? And everyone was like, started laughing, and they were cracking up because this guy was so dry. You know, he was so much into his dry scholarship, and look at him now. He's become like, you know, a madman. He's become like an ISKCON Brahmachari. So this Jignasu, they're in between the materialistic devotees and those devotees who actually want knowledge of Krishna. So then he says, then there's the Jnani. And he says that Jnani says here, he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute, he actually wants to understand God. Now a point is made that sometimes we say Jnani and we think that they simply want impersonal liberation. But these people, they're actually desiring knowledge of the Absolute. And an example, just like the example is given of Shonaka Rishi, Gajendra, and Dhruva Maharaj, and for these Jnanis, another example is given. Two examples are given. One is Shukadeva Goswami, and the other is the Four Kumaras. So we can understand that the Four Kumaras, they were Jnanis, and they had some bhakti, but they were using their bhakti to achieve the position of liberation. And they were actually situated in this shantara, so this impersonal understanding. But then it's described that later, that these four kumaras, because they were actually searching and trying to understand the Supreme Lord, later they came in touch with devotional service through smelling the tulsi leaves that were on the feet of the Lord. And when they came in touch in that way, everything changed. And they became great devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, he is saying this fourth class is the person who actually wants to understand the Lord. He wants to understand how the Lord creates. He wants to understand how the Lord maintains. He wants to understand how the universe is dissolved. He wants to understand how the Lord is carrying on pastimes within the spiritual world. He wants to understand, you know, what is my relationship with the Lord? What activities I can engage in to penetrate and enter that relationship with the Supreme Lord. So Krishna, he says that these are four types of pious people who will approach him. And the first three, their mention is having some desire to fulfill. But he says that this Jnani, he has Gyan. It's like his devotion is mixed with the desire for Gyan. But he says that he's actually better and he's free from lower material desires. So then the question comes up. How will these four varieties of people, one who's distressed, one who wants some material rewards, one who is curious, and one who is seriously looking for knowledge, how will they come to the position of pure devotion? Because once again, Krishna is trying to teach us in this chapter how we can come to the position of pure devotional service. Right from the very beginning of the chapter, he was saying, Maya Shakta Manaparta Yoga Yunjam Madashraya. He said, the purpose in my explaining this to you is to teach you how your mind can become a Shakti, or how your mind can become attached to me through the practice of yoga and full consciousness. And then he explains also, just to get an idea of coming to the position of pure devotion, or what is pure devotion, and coming to that position of pure devotion, there are a few verses in chapter 8 where he says, Ananya cetaha cheta satatam yomam smarati nityasa tasyaham sulabha partha nitya yuktasya yogina. For one who always remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. So he says, Ananya Chetaha Sataham. He says, always absorbed in remembrance of me. And then in 8:22, he says, Purusha saparaparta bhaktya labhyas tu ananyaya. He says, yasyanta shtani bhutani yena sarvam idam tatam. So this tva ananyaya, it means unalloyed devotion, or pure and unalloyed devotion. So he says, this is how these four varieties of people will actually be able to attain me in full, as if they develop the state of pure and unalloyed devotion to me. Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, or in one of these purports, he explains the verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. This bhukti mukti siddhi kame shakaliya shanta krishna bhakta nishkama atta eva shanta. He says that the bhukti, one who is desiring some material gain, the mukti, the person who is desiring liberation, the siddhi kame, the person who is desiring the mystical perfections, his bhukti mukti siddhi kame shakali ashanta. He uses the word shanta, that we all know. Shanti means peace, but he says ashanta, which means that they're not peaceful, because they have some desire to fulfill. But he says the Krishna Bhakta, he says Krishna Bhakta Nishkama, Atta Eva Shanta. He says, but the Krishna Bhakta, one who is a pure devotee of Krishna, one who has actually come to the position of pure devotion, they desire nothing for themselves. Therefore, they're actually peaceful personalities. And then in one of the purports as well, in the purport to text number 16, Srila Prabhupada, he quotes Srila Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. He says, Anyabilasita sunyam jnana karmadhyanavritam anukuyena krishna anushilanam bhaktir uttama. And here Prabhupada's translation is, one should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. So when these four varieties of men, when they have the opportunity to come in contact with pure devotees of the Lord, then they'll have the opportunity to become pure devotees as well. And then in the purport, I mentioned this already, but in relationship to the question that was asked yesterday about the miscreants, will the miscreants ever have the opportunity to become pure devotees? Srila Prabhupada says that because their attachment to sinful activity, he says it'll be very difficult for them. He said, but even amongst them, some may come in contact with a pure devotee of the Lord. And by associating with that pure devotee, then they also will be able to come to the position of pure devotional service. So he says, O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service to me: the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Then the question comes up, well, of these four types of people who are desiring to know the Lord, which one is best? And so Krishna, he answers that in text number 17. All of these people, they're looking for the Lord and they're desiring devotion, but of which all are the best? Which are the best? Which are the best? So he says, Tesham Jnani Nitya Yukta Eka Bhaktir Bishishyate Priyo Hi Jnani Notyar Tam Aham Sa Cha Mama Priya. He says, of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is the best, for I am very dear to him and he is very dear to me. So of the four, well, just different words we can go through in the verse here. He says, Tesham Jnani Nitya Yukta. He says, Eka Bhakta Vishishyate. So this Eka Bhakti, Eka Bhaktir, it means that this person, although he's called a jnani, His only interest is devotion. It says here, Eka Bhaktir. Eka means one. So his interest is simply one, and that is pure devotional service. Then he says, Priyo hi jnanino tyartham aham sa cha mama priya. He says, of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is best. It is for I am very dear to him, and he is dear to me. So, one point is that you have the other three types of people. The distressed, one who is desiring some wealth, one who is curious. Those three type people, as long as they're maintaining their desire to go to Krishna, they're in union with the Lord. And being in union with the Lord, they're becoming purified, so they'll be able to approach the goal. But the point is made that these jnanis that the Lord is speaking about, they're actually desiring to come to the position of pure devotional service. Therefore, it's free from qualities that the other three have, and it's a continuous form of devotion. A point which is made is that jnanis that are desiring simply to have impersonal liberation, they give up their bhakti when they reach the perfectional stage. That perfectional stage is known as sadhya. We have two positions. One position is sadhana and the other position is sadhana. But the jnanis that are described in this verse, they maintain their devotion even in the perfectional stage. And Chaitanya Charitamrita has described that jnanis, they will engage in bhakti to facilitate their achieving liberation. I had an experience of this back in 1989 when we had this big Kumbh Mela in Allahabad, India. And I was there sometime in advance of the Kumbh Mela, and I was going around and I was seeing all of our life members in Allahabad. We had many life members down there. And I met one man who owned a newspaper. And he was a very wealthy and a very influential man. And not only did he own a newspaper, but he owned a big temple in Allahabad. And so when I went to meet him in his office, he said, Swamiji, he said, tomorrow I want you to give a class in my temple. He said, I have a very nice lecture hall. It is very wonderful. You can go there and you can speak in the afternoon. And I said, certainly. I said, how will people find out about this? He said, well, I'll advertise it in my newspaper. And I said, well, maybe I could give a class in the morning. He said, no. He said, in the morning already, I have one Swamiji who's lecturing on the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I said, really? He said, yes. I said, what part is he lecturing on? He said, the five chapters that deal with the Lord's Rasa-lila. And I said, really? And I said, what is the man's name? And then he gave me a name that was something like something or other, Ananda, Saraswati, Tirtha. And he gave me this big name, and simply upon hearing the name, I knew it was the name of an impersonalist, or a Mayavadi. So then he said, well, let's just jump in the car, and we can go over to the temple, and you can see where you'll lecture tomorrow. Because he was proud, and he wanted to show it off. So we jumped in the car, and we went over there, and sure enough, there was a real nice lecture hall, and everything was, arranged very first class. So we saw it, and then when we were finishing, he said, would you like to meet Swamiji? And I didn't really want to meet Swamiji, but I was this one Indian devotee who's one of our organizers over there. His name is Mahamantra Das. So Mahamantra, he's from Allahabad also, and he knows how to deal with, so many different organizations. And so when the man asked me, do I want to meet Swamiji, then Mahamantra, he grabbed me by my kurta and he said, say yes. And I said, yes, let's go meet Swamiji. So then we went to Swamiji's room. He had like an ashram there. And we went to Swamiji's room, and sure enough, he was sitting there with his, practically red cloth on, so dark orange like red cloth, and completely shaved head, no sika left on the back, and no tilak on his forehead, and no beads on his neck. And there was some Rudraksha mala around his neck. And looking very big fellow, about as big as myself or bigger. And he was sitting there looking very serious and very, very stern. And I went, oh my goodness. I said, this, he's like a real Mayavadi, you know, impersonalist. And so we got pushed into the room. So we went into the room and we offered our pranam to that sannyasi. And he was sitting with a book in front of himself. That was the thing. He was sitting on the floor and he had a big book in front of himself. And we came in and he saw us and we were introduced. And the first thing he said is, oh, you must take prasad, Krishna prasad. And I thought that it was curious, you know, that he was going to offer prasadam. And so he looked at me and he said, because I am wanting liberation, daily I am worshipping Krishna. And he had one picture of Krishna in the room, and he had a little paper bag that has some laddus inside that he'd gone out to the sweet shop, and he'd bought some laddus and come back and put them in front of Krishna. So, you know, before I knew it, he gave me a laddu, and I didn't know what to do with it. I was just holding the laddu, and Maha Mantra's hitting me behind. He was saying, eat the sweet, eat the sweet. So finally I threw the laddu inside the mouth. And I was hoping that I hadn't done something wrong. And then he sat back down behind his big book. And he was like rubbing the book, you know. It's sort of like he had his hands on the book, like he was massaging the book or something. And I said, and then I wanted to be nice. I wanted to try to be nice. So I said, Maharaj, what book is that? And so it was translated into Hindi, you know, kya kitab or whatever they say. What book is it? And then he was like real serious. And he was like, he kept massaging his book. And he said, this book is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I was just thinking, wow, this is really far out. This guy, he doesn't even believe that Krishna is a person. And yet he's sitting here reading the Bhagavatam because he's going to give a class and these guys are going to give him a bunch of money for giving a class. And so I looked at him and I said, Maharaj, how many hours a day do you study Srimad Bhagavatam? Because they said he was a big scholar. I said, how many hours a day do you study the Srimad Bhagavatam? So he like had his eyes closed, you know. And he had those black horn-rimmed glasses on that all the sannyasis were over there. And he was like pressing his book, you know, he kept massaging his book. He had this horrible look on his face. And then after a couple of minutes, he like opened his eyes and he went, in English, he said, actually, there is nothing in this book. And when he said that, it was like a shock. You know, it was like a horrible shock because what does the Bhagavatam say? Bhagavatam is stated that after the Lord departs for the spiritual world, all religious principles take shelter in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is the incarnation of Krishna. You know, it's the Amala Purana, it's the spotless Purana. And he said, there's nothing in this book. And then, you know, I was like shocked for a second. But then my response was, then stop touching it. And don't speak from this book. And don't say anything about this book. And don't give commentary on this book. You have no right to do this. And this Maha Mantra was standing behind me. He was going, shut up, Maharaj, shut up. Don't offend the guy. I said, you don't have any business to touch this book. You don't have any business to speak about Krishna. And Maha Mantra was going, please, Maharaj, shut up. And then I looked at the man and I said, you don't have any business to speak on Bhagavatam. Your only business is you should just meditate. Meditate from morning till night. Don't do anything else. And the man looked at me, the sannyasi, and by that time he had his hands folded and he said, oh, but I meditate also. I said, don't do anything else. Quit speaking. Just do your meditation. But don't pass stool in everyone's ears. You know, the Maha Mantra, he took me by the arm. He said, let's get out of here, Maharaj. Then he took me away. So, A lot of these people, they actually do some worship. Like he was giving his ladus to Krishna, you know, and speaking something on Krishna. But what was his idea? His idea is by doing this, then I'm going to actually be able to achieve the position of impersonal liberation. And then in that position, what do? In that position of impersonal liberation, then they give up all forms of bhakti. Or Srila Prabhupada would decry the impersonalists. Somehow we got onto impersonalists. I'll just tell this one story and we'll try to get back on the right track again. But Srila Prabhupada would just decry the impersonalists. Because he would say, when they take their initiation, or at the time of taking sannyas, then they think that they have become Narayan. And then they greet one another, Namo Narayan, Namo Narayan, Namo Narayan. When first time I went to Vrindavan was 1976. And believe it or not, in 1976, I was about half again bigger than what I am now. I was in a very big state at that time. And I was relishing every aspect of Vrindavan. I was relishing, but then one day I was like really huge. One day, coming out of the Sanskrit college at the